If you're a talk radio junkie like me, you might assume that the programming is free. Commercial advertisers pay for the production costs and staff salaries. Well, that's true for most radio talk shows, but not for Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is listener-supported. We rely on you to pay for the production, salary, and airtime costs for this worldwide outreach. Hi, this is Todd Wilkin, asking you to consider making a tax-deductible gift to Issues Etc. today. You can donate online, issuesetc.org, or you can donate by check. Make your check payable to Lutheran Public Radio. The address? LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Remember, unlike other talk radio shows, Issues Etc. needs your financial support. We depend on you for the continuation and expansion of Issues Etc. Thanks for your consideration. Welcome back to Issues Etc. 10 more minutes in today's program. We're coming to you live this Tuesday, March the 15th. Joining us for the last few minutes, Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse. We're going to be talking about a New York Times essay contest on modern love, which everyone who has viewed the results says is eye-opening and enlightening. What do we learn? Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse is founder of the Ruth Institute based in San Marcos, California. She taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason universities, and she's author of the book Smart Sex and Love in Economics. Jennifer, welcome back.
Hi, Todd.
What do you make of the term, first of all, modern love?
Well, you know, it's kind of a conceit, isn't it? You know, as if there's some different kind of love today than there was 100 years ago or 1,000 years ago or something like that. Like, what's wrong with traditional love? What's wrong with just love without adjectives? You know, just love. You know, so that right away is your clue that the New York Times is up to something a little questionable, at the very least, huh?
What have you learned reading the past winners of this contest?
Oh, Todd, I tell you, you know, one of my colleagues sent this the link to the New York Times essay contest. Let me just explain to your listeners what it is. The New York Times is running a contest for college students, and you guys know I work with college students all the time. It's for college students by the end of March to submit an essay on what is modern love really like or something like that. And when you read the essays from past years, Todd, they're sad. They're sad. It's tragic, really, you know, that young people are looking for love, and their combination of frightened and clueless and in pain themselves and unaware that they're inflicting pain on others, you know. And when I read that, I realized that this is the culture that Ruth Institute young adults are revolting against. Right, the people who are attracted to the Ruth Institute are attracted to us because they're sick of that kind of thing that is being depicted in the New York Times essays, the life of the hookup, the life of not being sure whether it really means anything or not, whether you should suppress your feelings, you know, whether internet dating is really just as good as non-internet dating, you know, all of this stuff it's very depersonalized. It's almost inhuman when you read the descriptions that these young people are offering of what their love lives are about.
I mean, the important thing about this is that this is the college-age student's view of love in their own words. This is not some sociologist someplace analyzing what they think college students believe about love.
That's exactly right. Now, but having said that, I noticed that the students that were selected as winners all have this kind of nihilistic view of love and sex, you know. And it's hard for me to believe that there weren't any entries that were worthy that had some, you know, kind of romantic courtship, let's wait till marriage, marriage is going to be great, that kind of attitude. I didn't see anything like that amongst the winners that they posted. And so I just wondered, did nobody write anything like that, or did the New York Times just not choose them? You know, it just makes me wonder. And so we have kind of issued a challenge to the students that we deal with at the Ruth Institute, and I know the Love and Fidelity Network people have done so as well. We've issued a challenge to young people to say, let's flood the New York Times with essays from our people, from well-brought-up, young Catholic kids, young evangelical kids, young Mormon kids, write in and talk about what real love means to you. Kind of like the videos that our kids produced, you know, a month ago, showing what real love is. Those real love videos that our kids produced didn't have anything to do with hookups, I'll tell you that. And so if the New York Times gets a whole bunch of good essays describing love as it's meant to be, they're going to have to pick one or two of them, I hope. And I've told the students, you know, when the contest is over, if you don't win and we think your entry's worthy, by golly, we'll publish it. And now, you know, I realize we're not the New York Times over at the Ruth blog, but you know, hey, what the heck? If you've got something good to say, we're always looking for somebody who's got something good to say. And so we kind of issued the challenge to our students today, inviting them to submit their entries to the New York Times contest on what love really means, and then to let us know how it goes, you know, so that we can give some attention to entries that we think promote genuine, authentic, lifelong married love.
In a nutshell, what did you mean by the phrase nihilistic view of love?
Well, you know, nihilism is a philosophy of nothingism. You know, that's what I call it, nothingism. That there's nothing that's really of any value. You know, that one kind of relationship is no better than any other. There's one of these essays that where a girl writes in and talks about her boyfriend decided he was going to be homeless for a semester, and he was going to camp out under the stars in upstate New York someplace, wherever it is they were. And she couldn't think of any good reason to tell him not to do that. And even though he would be coming in shivering cold, and needing to use the shower and different things like it, frightened sometimes because he couldn't depict what the sounds were that he was hearing around them. She couldn't think of any good reason to tell him to not do that, you know. And so it's a world without any reasons for anything in particular. And so what you're left with is some combination of acting on impulse or acting in such a way as to call attention to yourself just to kind of make sure you're still alive. I mean, that's the sense that I get from a lot of the essays and from a lot of what you see in pop culture, too, is it people don't have any concept of what's of value. Nobody's saying to them, look, some things are of more value than others and therefore worth pursuing. It's just whatever you want. It's all wide open. Just do whatever you feel like. Well, so in that environment, when something painful happens, you kind of have to suppress the pain because you don't want to admit that this is a bad idea. But in other cases, I think people do some of the thrill-seeking behavior that they do just to kind of remind themselves that they can still feel something and that something's, that they're still alive in some way. And so I think that the whole idea of moral relativism, however appealing that might have been to people, you know, 50 years ago, people who are now trying to live with it without any Christian moorings, without any sort of a traditional basis for preferring some things to other, without any vestigial Christianity, people are finding it's really hard to live like that. It's very hard to live with that philosophy. And so that's part of what the young people are reacting to, and that's what they're writing about in the essay. So if you go and look at the New York Times essay, I imagine you have it posted already in your place, and we'll have it posted at ours too. Just read these essays, you know, and look at what these young people are saying about their sex lives and their love lives and what their aspirations are. They don't aspire to anything in particular. They can't bring themselves to aspire to anything in particular, and yet they're certainly unfulfilled. There's no doubt of that. You'll see that for yourself more dramatically than anything that you or I or any other old fogey could say to them.
Well, two quick final questions. Many are thinking, look, Jan, get with the times. The days of traditional love are gone. You're being old-fashioned. We've moved on for good or for ill. We've moved on. Your response with about a minute.
Well, you know, come on, Todd. Look, my objection to the sexual revolution is not that it's revolutionary and is not that it's quote-unquote not traditional. My objection to the sexual revolution is that it has not made people happy. And I defy you to read those essays of those young people and tell me otherwise. Those essays prove beyond any shadow of a doubt that the sexual revolution hasn't made people happy. So my question back to you would be, why should we continue on doing something that has such a poor track record in terms of human happiness?
What's the message you want to send to our hookup culture? 1 minute.
I want young people who know better to write their own essays and submit them to the New York Times and basically dare the New York Times to reject all of them. And then send them to us, and we'll take a look at them too. And our message is that lifelong married love for all of its difficulties, has the best chance of actually making you happy. We think that living without restraints is what's going to make us happy, but it turns out that being lawless and living in a lawless way turns out to have some constraints of its own that make you unhappy as well. So that would be my final message to the hookup culture.
Folks, you'll find a link to the New York Times essay contest, Modern Love, and a link to the Ruth Institute's blog under the Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org. Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse is founder of the Ruth Institute based in San Marcos, California. She taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason Universities, and she's author of the book Smart Sex and Love in Economics. Jennifer, thank you.
Thank you, Todd.
Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we'll talk about the history and theology of the King James Bible. Dr. Cameron McKenzie of Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana, will be our guest. It promises so much, doesn't it? And it had promised so much. Liberation from the shackles, the moral shackles, the societal shackles, the shackles of people's traditions and taboos, and that we would free ourselves to live more fulfilled lives. That's what the sexual revolution was supposed to be. What it's turned out to be is, in many ways, more enslaving than any moral restrictions ever could have been. It has done a pretty fair job of trashing marriage, increasing divorce, leaving children without fathers around, in some cases mothers around. It has confused several generations of young people so that they don't even know love when they see it, so that they're willing to settle, both now in their youth and even as they grow older, for something far short of love or commitment, just a one-night stand. You can hardly call some of them even one-night stands. That's what they'll settle for. Is this what the masterminds of the sexual revolution really wanted? I don't think even the most radical wanted this. But now that they have it, they're spending a lot of time trying to justify it because they know full well that this has been their doing. They know full well that the path they set the culture on 30, 40 years ago of sexual revolution has led us to this. I'm Todd Wilkin. Talk with you again tomorrow. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.